Did you earn any money while you were as a boy? Did you do?
Well, I used to tote back when crops was ready to grow when I was real young. I tote water to people working in the field with pool fodder back then. I guess you know what that is. Pull it off the corn stalk, tie it up, feed the stock. They'd be pulling fodder. And my neighbor up there, he'd give me totem water. I was about 12, I guess, 10 or 12 year old, and he paid me 25 cents a day. The totem, it looked like a wagon wheel, a quarter did to me then.
Yeah.
I used to haul out after I get my crop, after I got up bigger, you know, and my father done that. And I'd haul out and take my mule and livestock, and I'd plow all day long for $1.75 a day with my mule and livestock.
But what could you buy back then for, did everything?
Everything was real cheap, I don't remember, maybe get a bacon for $0.05 a pound, sugar and stuff like that for 25 cents a bag. And flour wouldn't be too much, it wouldn't be too high.
Did you have soda back then you could drink, or did you drink mostly water from the store?
Milk, mostly from water. Never did have too many drinks, but actually, we used to go and have these sayings, you know, it's around the churches, all these sayings, and the Coca-Cola people used to set up Coca-Cola stands in the bottle, and we'd get up enough money, we'd buy some of them, you know, it tasted pretty good.
What was the church like back then? Did you go to church every Sunday?
Yes, my mother and daddy, I went to Garrison Church, a little old country church out there. In Garrison Church every Sunday. I used to sing some. I helped lead the choir, you know, after me and my wife got married. But my daddy was a deacon there. And they were big church workers. And they back to school, little old school, and churches and everything back then, what they could, you know.
Did you have a youth group here back then?
No, we didn't have no youth groups back then.
Okay.
No. It started after y'all's generation. Youth groups and all that.
On the farm life, you mentioned tenants. Who were they? Family or?
No. My wife, she lived on, her daddy lived in one of the tenant houses one time when she was a little girl. And mostly my older sisters and their husband lived on the farm. Daddy let them have enough land, you know, to make them a crop. Well, his policy was when they got married, they could live in one of the houses for 3 years and didn't have to pay no rent, help them out. He was good. I had a good daddy. And he would let them stay there 3 years for no rent free and everything. Let them get started. And most of the boys and girls, they'd come back there and live, you know, and get that free rent and stuff like that.
What was basic training like when you went to World War II?
Well, it was pretty rugged. We'd have to get out every day, and we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I think, had to stand reveille, and they'd get us out there, and they'd maybe run us a mile, and then we'd walk a mile, and about all of them. We never get to ride none. We'd done all the walking, and then we'd go out on the rifle range, and I was in the machine gun, mortar. We'd go out there and practice, you know, shoot and all that, and we'd had 15 weeks of that. We'd had to crawl through the fences, you know, and mud and all that.
Under the barbed wire.
The barbed wire and all that. And then after we got our 15 weeks, I think it was just given 15 weeks back there, you know, they were meeting soldiers over there. They gave me a furlough, and I turned by home and stayed, I believe, 10 days. And I caught a train in Atlanta and went to San Francisco, California. And I caught what they call a General John Pope. There's 6,000 of us troops on it. And there's, I believe it was 2,000 or 3,000 employees on it. It was a big job. And we left. We had 31 days going over to the Philippines.
by ship.
Yeah, and then we got to the Philippines. They had to park out from a base a pretty good way.
Yeah.
Where they sunk all that ships, mm-hmm. you know, they done sunk ships and then they'd take them a little boat. We'd have to go over the side on the net, get in the boat, go land it and all. And we stayed there and then they got us up, I mentioned in the earlier tape about Filiberty Trail.
Yeah.
We stayed there and then they signed us their outfit and we got to what I call my platoon. There was two boys still living in it.
Yeah.
And all of them had been killed. Yes.
Out of how many?
I think it's 9 or 11 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And it had platoons, different platoons.
Yeah.
4 platoons to a company. And there was 2, I think, left in that. They were sure proud to see us get up there to help them out, you know.
Yeah.
And down in the valley there, we came back after the Filiberty Trail. We had to come down. We stood guard, you know. And at night, it'd be raining so hard, and them rice paddies, try to sleep. They'd be out in the rice paddy. And I have taken my steel helmet to lay my head on, keep the water out of my ears. Just go on sleep, you know.
Did you see mines on it? Did you have to search mines and search for mines and all that stuff?
I wasn't in that. They had different things, you know, to do that. But I just in the what they call 30 cal machine gun and 80 miller mortars.
What did the machine gun weigh when back then?
It weighed. It was come in a trap. There's 2 sections of it, a tripod and a barrel. It was what's called a water cool back then. Uh-huh. World War II, they don't have those things more. And we got it so hot one day that burnt the barrel out of it. It got the shining bullets around, like round and round, you know. And we had to change barrels, you know.
Yeah.
It was a jacket around that barrel and water in it.
Yeah.
What's called a water cool machine gun. And that mortar, 81, I love that thing. You could shoot from across the mountain with that, you know. You didn't have to get too close to people like that.
So basically, no aim, really.
No, you just, you had a compass there to tell you how far, what the range was to shoot. You had to dial it in. But now then, I think, most of the modern stuff they got now is on computers.
Yeah.
And they do it by computer, but we done it just in our head, you know, back then. We set it, range, how far it would shoot, so far, how far we need to shoot. So guessing, then we'd start shooting, and if it's too far, we'd draw it back down.
Yeah.
If it's too close, just add it up to it. And some of our troops got killed back then. That part, we was up there, and those airplanes, you know, come in and help us bombing.
Yeah.
And they'd have to throw a smoke screen, you know, just to tell them about where they wanted the bomb.
Yeah.
One time they broke one, or somebody broke a smoke bomb to get out of the tight. They got jammed up, pinned down, they smoked it, threw the smoke bomb, and got out, and then that's what the plane thought they wanted to bomb. They bombed their own boys.
Man.
It's a mistake, you know, they made. But, somebody didn't know, you know, they was trying to get out of being pinned down. They throw that to keep them, see them run back, get back out. The Japanese was tough fighters, I'll tell you that. They were smart.
Fighting in their own lanes.
We'd be sitting in the foxhole.
Yeah.
They'd come up at night and they had a bamboo, the old bamboo pole.
Uh-huh.
And they put a bayonet on them, but they find it, they just slide it up to you and jab you and kick you, you know. But they do things like that, and they sharp eye, they call them snipers.
Yeah.
And they get up in the tree, they kill a whole platoon where it could find him, you know. It'd be one man doing it all.
Do you have to walk through those marshes to see on the movie, the chest deep water?
That land over there was pretty good, you know. It's just if when it rained, it did rain over there. We'd have to get in it pretty deep then. After that, they declared war over, we come back out of the mountains, and then I didn't realize there'd been that many Japanese up in them mines, but I never seen so many of them. They come out from up there. We hauled out from up there.
Yeah.
Then I got in the motor pool after I got in sand and the MP. I had it pretty easy after that.
Yeah.
When they told me I could come home, I loaded up, come home. I got all out of the dog.
What did you do in the MP? Did you just
patrol? Or? Yeah. Keep a helpline down there. Some of them places over in Japan was off limits.
Uh-huh.
And the soldiers weren't supposed to be in them. We'd be in there patrolling. We told them we'd have to run them out, carry them, ride them up, carry them back to the base, whatever. There's certain places over there that was restricted they couldn't go into, you know. And I went to Nagasaki for the first atomic bomb.
Uh-huh.
Before I got any MPs, I was driving for my colonel.
Uh-huh.
And I had to drive my colonel to Nagasaki one Sunday. We went over and seen where that atomic bomb is.
Yeah.
And there was one building standing. And I called it, I was going to watch the call, it's sort of a worship place.
Uh-huh.
It's 6 miles or 6 square radius, sir.
Uh-huh.
And there's one, I won't help you, there's one smokestack there.
Uh-huh.
It didn't fall. It sort of bent over like that.
Yeah.
And that tabernacle or whatever it was, I don't know, it's sort of like a church here. Mm-hmm. And it was sitting out there in the middle of that town.
It's nothing left.
That, it wasn't bothered. It didn't hit it. Everything else was flat like that. It's sort of amazing to look at.
Yeah.
You know? It was all the buildings just flat on the ground. And all of Japan was just as bomb flat. You can smell those people. You know, it's got steel on there going through there. And you can smell them, you know.
How far away were you when they dropped that bomb? How far, like?
Well, let's see, we was in the Philippines when they dropped
bomb.
Right. That's what caused them to decide that they won't quit fighting when they dropped the. Truman decided he dropped that bomb over there, and they backed out because they wanted to stop the war. They dropped that. That's the first thing they dropped, and then they dropped another one over there somewhere. And another town, but Nagasaki, I believe, was the first. That's what we went to see. It was a 6 mile square, I believe. That comes along.
Did you ever have any close calls or pin down? Did you ever scratch by a bullet?
Bullets would get over, you'd hear them singing over your head, you'd be down, you'd lay pretty flat on the ground when you think you could. You saw like a snake, spread out, you know. But we had it most of the time when we set up. The riflemen had it more worse than we did. We had to back a rifle. We set up on a hill with a machine gun and that mortar and support the riflemen that towed the rifle. That boy came over, come old Snicky Pete, I don't know where you ever seen him on crutches, JD.
Mm-hmm.
He's in my outfit. He got shot. He was what's called a BAR man.
Yeah.
And, they didn't like them BARs. He got shot. I left it. I didn't get shot. I was back a little bit. We support the riflemen with their mortars and machine guns.
What was the sickness? You got many diseases over there, people catching?
Malaria.
Yeah.
A lot of them had malaria. And that's about the biggest thing I remember back then is malaria. You know, we had to. No, I didn't get it. We'd had when we. Down in the rest camp, you know, we had our bunks up in our tent. We had a net that went down up on top, come down over to keep the mosquitoes from biting.
Yeah.
And we had some repellent. They give us some kind of pill that we take to keep the mosquitoes biting.
Yeah.
That's about all. That's the worst disease, I guess, that some of them had over there.
So you stayed clean. You never got shot, never got sick?
No, well, I got had bronchitis when I was over there. I was out in big rain. I had bronchitis, and I had to stay in the hospital about 2 months for that. Yeah. It was sort of proudly, though, to get to lay around in a good, soft bed. And being up on the front lines, I got out of fighting about 2 months over there while I was over there. A month and a half, 2 months. So I had a bronchitis.
Yeah.